Welcome one, welcome all, step right up. Here we go, Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 3. I am your host, The Brant, and with me, as always, is...
your co-host, Brian Raddatz.
All right, and we are excited to be with you. Remember, you can send any questions, comments, anything for the show to portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com, and make sure you check out the store website, which is www.timemachineportal.com. So episode 3, Brian, I don't know if you've noticed, but all the episodes have been named after Star Wars quotes. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, you told me right before this podcast, so that helped.
All right, there you go. So this episode we're calling Just Like Beggar's Canyon Back Home. Do you know that line, Brian?
Yeah, and why did you call it that?
All right, so I called it that. First off, that's my favorite line from all of Star Wars, with all the famous Star Wars quotes that there are. This is my favorite line. I always get super pumped. So this is the end of episode 4. They're about to go make the trench run. And Luke's like, all right, boys, we're going in full throttle. And then Biggs Darklighter, his like friend from growing up that like nobody knows the story because he's barely in the movie. He's like, Luke, at that speed, do you think we can pull out in time? And Luke's like, just like Beggar's Canyon back home. So it's like, I'm always super pumped because I'm like, yeah, I know Beggar's Canyon. I think there was a Star Wars video game where you could fly through Beggar's Canyon. So
it took to episode 3 for your favorite quote.
It did. But there was a reason. You asked me the reason. Because in this episode, we are going to be talking about our gaming histories, the gaming we have done growing up. So, like, just like when I was a kid, all the gaming I did. So, are you excited to talk about your gaming history?
Yeah, I am.
I think it's going to be super fun. So that's where I got my quote in there for this one. So, all right, so as always, let's start with what's on your table. So we played a game together. Actually, this one is up for Spiel des Jahres, and this is Cult Express, and it is distributed by Asmodee. So what were your impressions? Tell us about Cult Express, Brian.
Yeah, it was a neat little game. It wasn't, like, deep strategy, so you're kind of in this... like on a train in like a Western era sort of thing. And you're basically just going through your deck, trying to move around, gather loot, and shoot everyone else with your like six shooter, that sort of stuff. So it's pretty quick. We got it to the table, learned the rules, even though a couple were not taught correctly. But it was still fun nonetheless. And you seem to like it too. You got it to the table after this game too, right?
I did. I got in a rousing 6-player game of it, which seems where you really get to have a whole bunch of the fun, and it made a lot more sense. I mean, the first time it wasn't crazy confusing, but like you said, we missed a couple rules. But it's a great game. You know, it's a programming game. So every round you flip over a train card that tells you there's going to be this many turns in the round, and a turn is you playing a card face up to a stack, and then everybody goes around and around and around playing their cards, and once you've played enough cards, you flip that stack over, and then here you go, and you program each movement. You can move up and down each car. You can move back and forward through the cars. You pick up loot. You punch people. You shoot people with your gun. In fact, one of the bonuses is whoever fires the most bullets, which they have to be successful in order to go through, so you have to have a target. And you go through, and it gets all chaotic because, like, oh, you just punched him and not knocked him into the other car. And, oh, you grabbed that loot right before I did. Or I was on top of the car and I punched myself in the face because no one was there. That kind of chaos. I think in the game that we were playing, two of the guys, was it Larry and Eric? And they were just going back and forth, just like, I'll punch you and then I shoot you. And then I jump to your car and I hit you. And it was hilarious. It just felt like you were in the middle of a Western movie. They weren't really accomplishing anything, but it was very humorous to partake in.
And I know at least Eric was very much at a disadvantage just based on how the rules were misinterpreted, or like, you know, like he just started off
absolutely.
At a strong or a weaker position. So
yeah,
I hope it wasn't frustrating for him, but he seemed to like it.
I think he took it well, so maybe we'll get a chance to play again.
It was kind of funny though, because there are two different levels on the train, which is a really cool setup. Like, they've got this train that you build, and there are a couple different levels. There are like all these different things like for the exterior that don't have any gameplay functionality, but you're building like a cactus here and there. But what I was trying to say was there are these bags of loot, and we thought we were being very clever by putting them on top of the train so we could see them, so everyone around the table could see them. And, you know, little did we think, like, oh, you're going to be able to be grabbing stuff on the top. People are going to get punched. They're going to be dropping loot. So all of a sudden, we've got all these bags of loot that should be on the first level of the train on the top. And, you know, I think only one person tried to grab one of the ones from the top thinking it was on the bottom, but it was just a funny switch. So then we had stuff on the bottom of the train on the top and stuff on the top of the train on the bottom. So I don't know. It was still fun, though.
That was great. So definitely a very fun game. I think one of my favorite parts, too, is every so often some of the cards you play go face down because you're in a tunnel, so you can't see what moves people are doing. So that definitely mixes it up. And at the end of every round, there's kind of like a compulsory action, like the train breaks and everybody slides forward a car, or you're on the roof and so everybody gets thrown to the back of the car because of the wind or whatever. Different funny things like that. The passengers decide to revolt and they punch all the people who are in the cars. So it just adds to it. It's great theme. I thought it was great because It was just better than I'd expected it to be. I knew Machikoro was up, and I really think Machikoro is a pretty good game. It's not super exciting, but it seems like a good Spiel des Jahres. And then I played this and I was like, no, that's really fun. That's very thematic. It's really neat. So maybe I didn't have high expectations, so it was more fun than that, which made it seem really good to me. But I enjoyed it.
Yeah. So, and I feel like this is a perfect one to just play, like, you know, International Tabletop Day. We always have like a 24-hour marathon. I feel like this fits perfectly in there where it's like you're tired, you just want to play something for fun, and it's not deep strategy. So,
yeah, definitely. No, definitely. Very fun. So, what else have we got?
Yeah. So, if you remember in our last podcast, we promised that we would be playing Spectre Ops, and one of us did. Unfortunately, we both couldn't get it to the table, but I ended up playing a couple games with Eric and Larry, who were beating up on each other in Colt Express. So we played a couple games of that. It's an awesome hidden movement game. So, you know, there's like one person who's an agent. He's up against all the other people in the game who are hunters. And the agent is like a secret movement sort of person. They're going around this huge warehouse, like it's basically a grid, and they're trying to get to these key points on the grid and activate or deactivate certain objectives, you know, activate or deactivate three out of the four, and get out of the complex before the hunters have basically killed the agent. And I love the game. It was a very cool secret movement sort of thing with special powers. It did seem very difficult. Like, we were playing with three people. And I think just based on the way we were learning the game, it was very difficult because the agent didn't necessarily know how they should play. It seemed like it was, like, the agent seemed like they were trying to, like, rush in, do something very quickly when they actually had a decent amount of time. So it seemed a little more straightforward for the hunters to just end up killing the agent pretty quickly. And I think by the end of the second game, though, we started getting this, like, this really cool back and forth where the hunters are just kind of moving around. The agent is doing like laps around the complex, basically trying to stay out of sight. And it was very neat. It was kind of like this press your luck sort of thing where the agent ended up trying to sneak by one of the hunters and was found on the road or something, and then, you know, that was it for the agent. But it was an awesome game. I know you're still looking forward to getting this to the table, right, Brant?
Oh, absolutely. This was not lack of trying or want for not getting to play Spectre Ops. It was just a bunch. I'm a teacher, as many people know, and finishing up the school year is just so crazy, and finding that timing of meeting up with people to play. So it was just tricky, but I'm dying to play this game. In fact, I broke it out twice at the store on a table just to check it out and see if I could find time to play a game, but it just wasn't able to happen. So
yeah, I think I went into it a little cautiously because you open up the box And Plaid Hat usually has like a ton of components, a whole lot of stuff in there. And this one felt like it was kind of empty to me. But then getting it to the table, you kind of understand, like, you know, all these hidden, like the hidden movement and all this like back and forth where it's like you're trying to outguess your opponent. Mm. You can understand why there aren't many components to this game and it still has an awesome gameplay. So
yeah, definitely a battle of wits type game. Yeah.
And I think now like this is two in a row, at least I think Dead of Winter was their previous title, but this is like two in a row that Plaid Hat has just hit out of the park for me. So I'm excited to see some more stuff coming from them.
Yeah, definitely. I am excited for Ashes. It finally was at Origins and people were talking about it. And I have pre-ordered this and talked about this for a while. So that's another Plaid Hat game. So that's super exciting. All right, this is the Brent. I'm here with my wife, Kathy. And we just finished playing a game of Nations, the dice game. So what did you think, Kathy, overall?
Overall, I liked it.
Yeah, it was fun?
Yes.
What did you like about it?
I liked that it was quick and that it was easy to learn. There wasn't a big learning curve. You could just kind of jump right in and play it. And I liked the mechanics of it, too.
Yeah, the different routes that you can go about.
Yeah, I like that you you move forward by adding different types of dice to your pool. That was interesting and fun.
Yeah, yeah, and it's kind of interactive. You have this board out here, and you can get tiles, so you're not directly affecting the other people, but you can buy the tiles from the board kind of that they're going after, and that lets you re-roll the dice. You don't have to worry about the randomness as much. What about the components? What did you think about them?
Good. I mean, the dice were very easy to read and everything. The tiles were nice for the most part.
Yeah, the colony ones kind of look like golf holes or something.
Yeah,
the art could be a little better there. Yeah. Yeah, and I like the tiles that you get. They're good. What do you think about Fun Factor if you rated it 0 to 10?
I think it was 6 or 7.
6 or 7. So do you think with more plays it would go up or down?
Hard to tell. I would definitely try it with more players.
Yeah. See. And more people, you think? You think it would be fun with more people?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah?
I tend to like less people when I play, but...
Right, but, I mean, with four people, I think as long as you had people who were thinking about their turn, kind of you have two plans, like you have an A plan and a B plan, you know?
Right.
And wait and see what happens.
Yeah, as long as it stayed quick.
Yeah, and there's different rounds, there's different things you can collect and roll the dice, and they have ways to try to mitigate the randomness, but... That is Nations, the dice game. Kathy rates it a 6 or 7 overall.
All right, so that's Kathy talking about Nations, the dice game. I got a chance to play this. I also thought it was very fun. You heard a lot of my comments on there. So, Brian, I know you played Nations, the dice game. What do you think about? What did you think about that? How did you feel about it?
Yeah, I need to get that to the table again. And I think I'd rather play like a two-player head-to-head sort of thing rather than... Like, I ended up playing a four-player game of Nations.
Yeah.
I think it would be a lot better from my... for a two-player tactical sort of, you know, dice-building game. But it was enjoyable. I lost pretty badly, so maybe that's part of why I didn't enjoy it as much. But...
Yeah.
I would like to try it again. It's not something that I completely ruled out. Like, it was still fun losing the game.
Right.
But, yeah, I'd like to try it out again. I guess the only downside that felt a little strange was, like, there were some limitations on what you could do. I don't know. I guess I tried going military pretty quickly, and it didn't really work out in my favor. Maybe it would again, but it just didn't work for me that game, so... I want to try it again, but...
I do think that the four-player count is very different, and the two-player count is very different, and I did feel like it's a better game with less people. Two might even be the optimal way to play this, just because you have that back and forth, and, you know, it's fun when you can take other people's tiles and stuff, but it's just kind of like, well, the randomness of, oh, you know, this one war tile came out, and they went before me and took it, and that's it. Like, now my whole war strategy is not working so well. So, obviously, you know, you're supposed to get rerolls to mitigate, but that only helps so much.
Yeah, so. I think I ended up going first every round drafting a tile. And I guess maybe I just made poor choices, but I was pretty far behind, like I said. But I don't know. I'll try it again.
Nice. All right, that's Nations the Dice Game, also Asmodee Games. So what else have you brought to the table, Brian?
Yeah, and like I said before, I wanted to try to get an older game, you know, hopefully something that's a little more available than mm-hmm. Star Wars: The Queen's Gambit, but... But I ended up playing San Juan, which is a neat little card game in the Aleo line, I believe. So it's like distributed in the U.S. by Ravensburger.
Gotcha.
And I don't know, it's a neat game. I did talk about Race for the Galaxy a couple episodes ago, and it totally felt like a simplified version of that to me. It's one where you've got cards that you're using as resources and buildings, and you know, it's basically the cards function in many different ways, and you're just trying to keep building more buildings, gaining more points, and not every action or not every phase of the game happens every turn. So it was fun. I don't necessarily think I'm going to get it to the table that often when we've got Race for the Galaxy.
Yeah,
but I think if someone's going to be jumping into it, it would be a lot easier to teach to a new person. I know Race has that problem where there are all these icons and, you know, it's very it's very difficult to jump right into that game without having any sort of history in that. And I know that's one of the difficult things. Like, even I had a problem just hopping into it with someone who had played a lot with my wife. The first couple games, I just kept losing because I didn't have that line of thinking. You know, it was just, you had to get some experience in there before you actually got good at the game. This one, I feel like you could hop in with someone relatively inexperienced and it would be a fun back and forth. Have you ever played this, Brant?
I have not played the physical version of San Juan, but I have played the iOS version. So, yeah, I definitely agree with you. The abilities are printed on there. There's less overall cards to worry about. There aren't all the phases. It's kind of like somebody just picks an action, and then that action happens, and everybody does it, as opposed to, you know, the phases that people pick. And then, like, what is this phase with trading for Race of the Galaxy? But it definitely has that feel. San Juan is similar to Race for the Galaxy. At the same time, it's a great intro for the mechanics of Puerto Rico, an older game. You know, they're related to each other. They're meant to be the same idea. And so I think it's a good gateway into either of those, yeah. Into Puerto Rico or into Race for the Galaxy.
Yeah, I guess I need to try Puerto Rico then.
Oh, man. Yes, you do. Such a good game.
Is it bad that I haven't played it and we're on a podcast?
No. Nothing,
okay.
Nothing's ever bad. It was one of those games that was just super popular. Everybody's playing. It was great. And then it just went on the quick decline. I think just other things replaced it. And it doesn't have any luck. So it's just always the same. And so I think it became, you know, over time. But it's a great game.
I must have missed out on that a little bit.
Yeah, the first times you play it, it's so good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's a good one. All right. And then last up for what we've been playing, what's on our table, is a game called Welcome to the Dungeon. Everybody's waiting for me to say Welcome to the Jungle, and I remembered this time. And this is Yellow Games, and this is a filler, definitely a light filler. And the theme here is you're all the same dungeon person. So you're all playing a warrior or a rogue or a barbarian or a mage or wizard. I can't remember which it is. And you're going into the dungeon, and you have all your equipment, and you're ready to take down the big bad guys. But then slowly your equipment starts disappearing, and the baddies...
disrobed? Is that...
disrobed. The baddies start piling up, and everybody kind of turns tail and leaves one person to just play that. So mechanically what's happening here is you've got all these cards out that are representing the different items that a character's carrying. So your mage has his staff, and your warrior has his sword and his shield and all that kind of stuff. The rogue has a cape and all these different things. And this is the best part of the game to me, is that they made these four different characters that play totally different. So on your turn, you draw a card from the deck. You look at a monster, and there's only 13 cards in the deck. Yes. And you look at that one, and you can either add it to the dungeon face down, so now you have some information of what's in the dungeon when somebody has to run the dungeon, or you can remove it from the game, and you remove an item. So normally you would think, oh, I'll do that, and that'll kind of, you know, hurt the people after me, but they can all then pass on their turn. That's the third option you have, and they leave you standing, and now you've got to run that dungeon, that gauntlet of creatures that have been left there without the items that have been removed from the game. So it's definitely a bluffing game, a pressure luck game, together, and everybody, you know, trying to, you get those turns where it's like, I know right now I can run the dungeon, but I've got to either pass or add another card or remove an item, and that's going to leave it where I'm not sure. So I have played this with two, I've played it with three, I've played it with four, and it's been good with all those numbers. I've really enjoyed it. It's hilarious. You definitely, like, do one of those, I knew it, I shouldn't have. But, you know, it doesn't bother you because the whole game takes, you know, 15 minutes or whatever. What did you think about Welcome to the Dungeon, Brian?
Yeah, it's an awesome filler. You know, if you only have, like you said, like 15 minutes, you can get this to the table. And it's got some depth to it, too. It's not just, like, a mindless exercise. You have to really think about what you're doing on your turn. I was a little scared of playing, like, I didn't necessarily think it was going to be my style of game. I know some other podcaster out there was really excited about it and loved it, Tom Vassell. And usually I don't go with what he likes, but this one's had a ton of success. I've enjoyed it two player. I've enjoyed it four player. I don't know if I played it three player. No, actually I did. But each time I feel like there have been, I think the person who's won most of the times has been because we've pressed our luck a little too much, you know?
Yeah,
so definitely. Everyone ends up dying instead of going through the dungeon successfully. So, but yeah, it's an awesome game. It's a tiny game, but there's a good amount of stuff to it.
And what was interesting is I don't even know if I told you about this, but I played this with some kids or young teenagers. I got to break this out and play with them quickly and, you know, the heck with rules and whatever. And they just kind of jumped in and start playing. And I mean, I feel like typically you can kind of figure out, or you know the person, you can kind of play some of the people, but they were just making decisions blindly based on whatever. Like, they would remove the dragon and remove the card that says, get, you know, the sword that gets rid of the dragon. Like, what benefit is that? But there was no rhyme or reason to what they're doing. It made the game even more fun because now you couldn't even predict what people were doing. It was just chaos, and it was hilarious to see what would happen. Sometimes you would run the dungeon, there'd be like seven cards, and you'd just slice them all down, no problem. Next time there'd be like three cards, and you'd be dead by card two because it was just brutal what was left in there. So that was a really fun way. I almost wonder about just kind of blindly playing. I wonder, in the rules it says there's a variant where everybody just has to put their first card in. I almost wonder if you just seed the deck with the number of cards of players that there are. So you just put the first four cards in and nobody looks at them. What that would add, I mean, it would be ridiculous. Obviously, you'd take away some of that calculation, but it really, the randomness just really added to the flavor and the fun. So that was good. So that is Welcome to the Dungeon, Yellow Games. Okay, so let's tell you about some upcoming events at the portal. Actually, just two quick things to go over here. The first is, remember, we have our board game nights every Wednesday. We're there from 6 o'clock till close, which is 11. And we're just playing board games, taking stuff off the shelf. If you let us know ahead of time, I've been taking stuff home and learning it so that people can play what they're interested in playing. So that's been really fun. The group's getting bigger every week, so there's more people to find to play with, more games to try out. So that's been really exciting. And then the next event we want you to know about is we are playing Forbidden Stars. So this is the new game from Fantasy Flight Games. It's only a four-player game, so you definitely want to sign up and get yourself in on that. We're going to be playing Forbidden Stars on July 11th. That's a Saturday, right around 2 o'clock. So we'll be taking signups for that. You can come to the store, sign up. You can send an email to portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com, and you can sign up there. And we'll be playing this. We just played a game of Twilight Imperium once this posts, and we'll let you know how that went, Twilight Imperium 3. That was an all-day event. I don't expect this one to be an all-day event, but it's a pretty long game, 3 to 4 hours. So you're going to want to set aside a good portion of the afternoon there to play this. So that's our big event. Again, Forbidden Stars by Fantasy Flight Games, Saturday, July 11th at 2 o'clock. Anything else we should know about you can think of for events, Brian?
Nothing that I can think of at the moment. I mean, I'll be going to the board game nights on a consistent basis. So I'm looking forward to both of those things that you've mentioned already.
Nice. All right, I'm excited here. We're going to talk about our gaming histories, things about us, how we got into gaming, who we gamed with, games we played growing up. Obviously, we can't sit here and tell you everything. It was just
when I was one.
Long and boring. When I was one and in Las Vegas. No. So let's just start off. So, Brian, tell us about gaming. How did you get into gaming? What do you remember playing growing up? Take it away.
Yeah, so I guess looking back, it was kind of, there were a couple things that I started off with, you know, some basic things like cribbage or some card games just with my family. I remember in like memorial school or whatever, I would play chess with like different game clubs or whatnot. You know, nothing that's really like, I guess the foundation for what I've turned into now, but it eventually took hold with, like, you know, we'd play Magic. We had a group that would go up to the time machine, actually, and play in the basement. Nice. We would play, like, Friday Night Magic. And afterwards, we would get, like, ice cream or whatnot. Along with that, we would have, like, some game nights where we'd play, like, Talisman or Munchkin. Stuff that's kind of basic, looking back at it now. But we had a good time, so that's all you can really ask for. I guess there were a couple events that we would go to, like a couple of conventions. The biggest one I remember going to was Historicon, which had been in Pennsylvania. I don't know exactly where they're going to be going forward, but it's over the summer.
It's in Virginia now.
Yeah, thank you.
Fredericksburg, Virginia.
Well, yeah. that threw me off a little bit. But thank you, Brant. So if people are looking for that, that's, I believe it's in July. Unless yes. That's changed too.
No, I think it's in July.
July. Okay. But yeah, I mean, that's a very historical based gaming convention, if you couldn't tell from Historicon. But it does have some small like tables in there where, you know, you're going to play something that's a little more or a little less focused on wargaming and whatnot. So I remember going with like a group of friends. A lot of time we did end up just playing like Magic off in the corner, but you know, once you kind of got immersed and used to the crowd, like we would hop into like a NASCAR racing game, which was really cool. We played like a Star Wars game where you were on the speeder bikes or whatever.
Pod stuff racers?
Like that. No.
Oh, in speeders like on Endor?
Yeah, stuff like that. And it was just like, it was really cool. I guess we did play a pod racing game too. I think I ended up smashing into the canyon wall or something, but I don't know. Like, I remember going to that convention quite frequently, and it was a good foundation. Like I said, like, it's where I saw a little bit more. I was exposed to more than just like the very basics, like Talisman and Munchkin, you know, somewhat entry level games now, mm-hmm. But there was a lot of depth there, and I just enjoyed going to that sort of stuff. So.
Nice. Yeah, when I was younger, I played a bunch of games. I played all the Milton Bradley type games and everything at home. But the big thing for me when I was young was when I was like 7, 8-ish, my brother, who's older than me by 6 years, was playing games with some friends, and they were playing the heavier strategic game. So they were playing a game of Axis and Allies. They would play pretty regularly. And Axis and Allies, if you don't know, takes five. There's three on the ally side and two on the Axis side. And so one night they didn't have their fifth player, so they were looking for somebody. So my brother said, I'll try to bring my brother. He's young, but he can sit in. So they were kind of like, here you go. This is Russia. Bye, men. Throw him forward. There you go. You're playing the game. And I just fell in love. It was like my favorite thing. I love these intense strategy games, and I just went forward playing there. So in addition to Axis and Allies, we were playing a ton of Titan, which is an old bookcase game from Avalon Hill, like a fantasy fighting game. So those were my two. It was Axis and Allies and Titan, playing those all the time growing up. And then the big Christmas came when I got HeroQuest, the Milton Bradley game. And my cousin stayed over like for the week straight that we had Christmas vacation, and we just played this into the ground. My brother was Zargon, the villain, and my cousin and I split up the heroes, and we just played and played and loved it. My brother thought it was stupid because he didn't understand that he was not supposed to win, that we were supposed to win. I didn't really play a lot of Dungeons & Dragons and things like that growing up, so it had more of that kind of feel with a dungeon master. But just totally loved that game, and then just started pouring in all those kind of strategy games and all sorts of stuff. But I think my biggest regret from growing up as a kid, the game I don't have anymore, is Battle Masters. Have you heard of Battle Masters, Brian?
I've seen the box. I haven't seen it in action, I guess. So
this is a 4-foot by 4-foot plastic mat with large hexagons that you lay on your floor. And then you put these rectangular pieces out that have actual miniatures. It was Milton Bradley with Games Workshop made it together, so the miniatures were really nice. And you would put these out, and there was the Imperial Army, and there was like the Dark Forces or something, and you battled each other. And it was a pretty simple game. It was a deck of cards. You shuffle it up, you draw it, and if a picture of a unit, there were wolf riders and goblins, and there were crossbowmen and, you know, horse riders, cavalry, and if your unit was on the card, you got to move, and they all had a little separate movement, and then they just had a number of dice they rolled, kind of like Heroescape or some of those games where you have the skulls and the shields, and you'd roll for how many hits, and they'd roll for how many defense. And you try to eliminate units. But the best part was each side had like its specific awesome unit. And so the chaos side had the ogre, and the ogre had like six cards, and you shuffled up, and three of them were move and three were attack, and he had like a big nasty attack. And so you'd hope you could like move, get closer, and then attack three times. And then the Imperial side had the mighty cannon, and the mighty cannon, you would shuffle up these cards, you'd put a target on a unit, and then you'd flip cards one at a time, and the cannon would either go through the air, it would explode and it would hit the space short of where it was supposed to, or it would actually bounce, which is obviously ridiculous, but it would deal a damage to that unit and keep going. And then it would land on its target and blow up the target. Or it could blow up immediately and blow itself up if it just it struck right in front of itself. So this was a great game. So I remember playing that growing up was kind of a super blast. And then as I got older, I had some friends who went to the time machine. So I think this was before you were going there, because I'm a little older than you. But we would drive over and play Magic and Star Wars CCG there at nights. And my friend's dad would do laundry and fold laundry at the laundromat and stuff. And then we'd go. So that was kind of getting into, you know, kind of that community gaming, all that kind of group stuff. So,
yeah, I think that sort of stuff sounds really cool. I would have had a tough time. I would have loved to have played more stuff with my brother. I mean, growing up, the one thing that really we could get to the table was Magic, you know, because that becomes so much of a lifestyle game. You're thinking about it outside of the actual game, all that sort of stuff. Like, I wanted to play, like, Risk or, you know, Stratego or even, like, Survive. I don't think it was Escape from Atlantis at the time, but
yeah,
I wanted to play that sort of game. Even Monopoly, I would have played with my brother. It was Star Wars Episode One Monopoly.
Nice.
If that helps. That must have been pretty terrible, but I don't know. We ended up playing Magic quite a bit, my brother and I, because we had friends that would play. We would draft with like five of us or whatnot, and just get a bunch of games to the table like that. You know, up until, I guess, college, that's kind of when there was like the first lull. We kind of took a break for a little bit, you know, when it was kind of getting toward the end of college. Like, I started picking it back up. I was working at the store like a day a week, and it would kind of lead right into me playing Friday Night Magic again. And that really got me back into like that sort of game. Like, a, you know, Magic is, it becomes more than just, like, you're going to sit down and play with a deck. You're thinking about deck building and what else you could do with the different cards that are available, like in the sets and whatnot. So I guess it wasn't really until my lifestyle changed again. You know, I met my future wife, Brant, even, when all of a sudden these other games started coming up. I remember Brant was bugging me quite a bit about a tile, because I worked at the store, so Brant was missing the catapult tile from Small World, and he would just keep bugging me about getting a replacement sent to the store and then bring it to like Ultimate Frisbee, and Brant would pick it up there. And then I think one of the first games I ended up playing with, like, with Brant and Rachel, my wife, was Seven Wonders up at your old house.
That's right.
And that really like led into me just getting a bunch of games and being excited about all this sort of stuff.
Right.
So, but
yes, in case people don't know, Brian and I did not meet playing games. We met playing Ultimate Frisbee. We both played Ultimate Frisbee. So that was the first game that we played together. So yeah. And me getting from CCGs to that moment was, you know, had friends. We always played some board games. There were still strategic board games throughout there, playing some role-playing Star Wars RPG and stuff like that. But it was really like my senior year of high school that my friends had an exchange student. He was from Germany, and as a gift, he had bought them Die Siedler von Catan, which is the Settlers of Catan, the actual German version. And so he taught us to play, and we played Settlers of Catan, and that was awesome. Loved playing that. Then I remember he left, went back to Germany, and we had German rules. And we broke this out, and we were like, how do you play this game again? We had to try to remember and hope we were getting rules right, because we couldn't read the rules. And that led me onto the internet, finding out, oh, people have rules on the internet, or this game is in English and posted. And then finding websites like Board Game Geek and company websites, and Fantasy Flight Games, I know, is huge for me, finding all their games and the big box games and all that stuff, and then really starting to purchase games and get people into that, and then meeting Brian and playing Frisbee together and getting him to come play games with us. I think we played Small World, though, after all my bugging you to play that. I feel like Small World must have come to the table at some point. I remember playing that Seven Wonders as well, and Eclipse. I remember bugging you to get Eclipse so I could play
it. And I remember, like, Quarriors. I think Ascension was pretty big with our group for a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
I know, I'm like, there are certain games just, they kind of take over for a little while, and then it transitions to something else. I remember those ones specifically. But
they're all still really good games. I still look back at those, and I'm like, I play most of those games again. Small World's the one that's hard all the time. There was a lot of ups and downs. That started to feel like Monopoly. We started to beat each other's throats.
Yeah, I've tried playing that a little bit, because Rachel was playing with you guys a bit, and I've tried playing like a two-player game with her. It's enjoyable. I don't know. I guess it's just tough for me. Like, I don't love it, and I feel like I lose a lot, so those two things don't really go hand in hand with me playing it a lot.
And Eclipse died that night for my birthday. I wanted to play Eclipse, and so we played on my birthday. We played the day after my birthday, and both those nights were like 6 hours. So we played like a 12-hour game of Eclipse, and I think that wore that out for people. That was a pretty long game.
Yeah, our group can take quite a bit of time.
Yeah, that was.
But
that was
a little, it's enjoyable fun, for the most part. I guess Eclipse was one of the rare.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, and I don't think that game was ever intended to be. Whatever it was. So yeah, and then playing at the store together, then I feel like then it just from there, playing all these games and just realizing how many there were, and getting an opportunity to work at the store and open up games and just explore so many more. And listening to podcasts is now a huge part of my
You just gaming. Got me into the the Secret Cabal, I started listening
Oh, yeah, they're very fun to listen to. I like the banter of five people.
Yeah.
I think that's enjoyable. So,
so we just need three more.
That's right. Yeah, we have to pick up three more people. So you can email us if you're interested at Portal Gaming Podcast.
Our cap is at three, though. We can't have more than five.
Yeah, that's true. So there you go. Okay, so let's talk about what's new at the store. So first, I want to start with the Warhammer 40K game Forbidden Stars from Fantasy Flight Games. This is scheduled when we're recording this to come out this week, which I believe would be Friday, June 19th. By the time this posts, it'll either be that day or later. So we should have it at the store. I know I'm getting a copy. So if we only get one, maybe a little short on those, but I'm not too worried there. So I'm excited for this. Other games that are out on the shelf now, Boss Monster 2, The Next Level. I know Boss Monster's very popular. It's like an 8-bit style looking game. That Spyfall, I'm super excited about. That's an awesome game that I can't wait to get to play. We've got Bang, The Valley of Shadows, the Battle Lore expansions. There's expansions for each army in Battle Lore. We've got the new Descent expansion is out, the Visions of Dawn Hero and Monster Collection. We've got sleeves for Warhammer 40K, so you could put those on your Conquest cards or whatever other cards you're looking to do. Pingo Pingo. Brian, have you seen this game?
Yeah, I watched the video, the Dice Tower Origins preview sort of thing, so I'm excited to get that one to the table.
I am so excited. So this is a game about penguins and you're hunters on an, I don't know, it's crazy to explain. It's a very active game. You hide these different kind of cardboard stand-up, kind of like those things that would be on tables at restaurants, kind of advertising things. You hide those around your house, and then you play at a table, and then there's a soundtrack you can play, and you flip cards, and they kind of tell you what to do. Like, it might say you have to run from one side of the bridge to the other, and so you have to go run and find one side of the rope bridge, tag it, find the other side of the rope bridge, tag it, and then be the first person to sit down, and I believe that's how you score. And then it comes with a dart gun. Tell us about the dart gun, Brian. That's too exciting.
Oh, I don't actually know that much about it. It looks cool. It's got a dart gun. What can you say that's wrong about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to go hunt. I don't know if it's the penguins that you hunt or what it is, but it'll tell you got to go. So you take the dart gun, whoosh, you got to go fire them wherever they are in your house.
Yeah, I think you're trying to shoot something from a certain distance away, right? And like,
yeah,
as the soundtrack is playing, like if the penguins hop out or say that's pingo, it pingo.
Yeah,
it's,
they can stop you from being able to do it.
And it looks like this was kind of a rehash, like a retheming of an older game. I don't know much about that. I don't know why I threw that out there. I don't know if you know anything about that older game.
I don't either. So, but Pingo Pingo's Yellow Games, I know that. Yeah. So, so that one looks really exciting to me. I'm kind of into those goofy games. They have their niche. I think, like you said, when you're out of 24 hours of gaming, those are great. When you just need something at the end of the night after playing 12 hours of Eclipse.
Yeah.
those kind of things. So other things I see on here are Master Fox, a really cool game. You can play with kids, a family game, where you wear these giant fox masks, which are basically blindfolds, and you have to reach into a box, and it's like going into the chicken coop trying to find the right thing. So that's really cool. Bring Out Your Dead is the first Upper Deck board game. They have a lot of card games, a lot of IP related things, and this is totally their own. I believe it's a worker placement. You have to bury your family in the best plots available, so kind of an interesting theme there, but I've heard good things about it.
Yeah,
so definitely
hopefully we get that in stock. It was one that kind of got shorted on our first shipment, so hopefully we'll actually get it this time.
Nice. And then I see we've got new D&D Attack Wing stuff with the Blue Dragon, the Pegasus, the Silver Premium Dragon, and a Stone Age expansion that's out. That was interesting because that is quite down the line from when Stone Age came out. That's like a 2007, 2008 title, I want to say.
Yeah, it's been a while. I know it was on tabletop recently, so it seems like it's kind of hit another groove. But
yeah,
there were didn't seem to be much out about this expansion. I think this expansion was out a while ago, and then it went out of print. And now it's kind of back and out in the wild again, you know. But it didn't really seem to draw much attention to it. And I Stone Age is a really fun game.
It is very fun. Yeah. But, yeah. It's a pretty simple worker placement, but it totally has its place. You may play it with people who don't play a lot of games or want an intro to a worker placement, but you'll have plenty of fun yourself. You know, I think of Lord of the Waterdeep similar in that sense. So very fun. All right, Brian, why don't you tell us about games that are up for pre-order?
Yeah, so we've got a bunch that we kind of talked about last episode or last podcast. I guess some new ones that kind of jumped out that are exciting for me are, let's see, there are a couple. There's La Granja, which is a really cool game. It looks fun, and I played it once. It was like a medium weight Euro, and you're just using cards with different functions, and it looked really cool, and it was fun. El Grande is going to hopefully be back in print at some point down the road. It's I don't know. It's one that I want to try out. It seems like a lot of people put it very highly on lists and whatnot. It seems like it's somewhat basic, but it's also got some depth to it.
I would put that with Puerto Rico. That's one of those like,
Have you played El Grande?
I played El Grande. Okay. Yeah. It's like an area control game. It's very good. And there may be games now that you're like, oh, I kind of rather play this than El Grande. But, I mean, they're still really good games. And so, you know, that's one that would be in that list.
Yeah, I think not the same thing, but like Mission Red Planet is another one that's going to be coming back out. That's an older game that's really cool. It kind of has a Citadel's sort of mechanism, I believe, like you're kind of playing different roles and trying to use like area control on Mars. And that one looks like it's going to be coming back out from Fantasy Flight. So, you know, the components are going to be awesome.
Yeah, that's going to be the best. I mean, obviously the game itself is very good. I've also played Mission Red Planet. That's a very fun game. But the components are going to be top notch now with Fantasy Flight heading that up. So that'll be great.
Yeah. And then let's see, Rattle Battle, Grab the Loot. That one's coming out from Portal Games. That's a really cool pirate looking game. Like I watched a video for it. It's somewhat, there was an in-depth kind of review on the Dice Tower channel, but that one looks really good. The components really do look good, and it's a pirate themed game, which usually is fun.
You watched the one with Z playing the game?
Yeah.
Oh, this game looks awesome. You take the box bottom and you put it out there, and then you pick up all these dice, which represent different people's ships. Some are your pirates, so some are each player's ships, and some are the ships that you want to go loot, and you throw them all in the box, and then it's like their actual physical distance and what side they're on.
Yeah.
So some of the, like, I mean, they're not really enemies because they're the, like, merchant ships that you're trying to sink. But they're on a side that just says, hey, these got away from you.
Yeah.
And then you just take a regular card and you measure distance to see if you reach that one or not. So that looks super exciting.
Yeah, and yeah. I think that should be out around Gen Con, hopefully, nice. Based on Portal's estimation. I guess the next one that kind of jumped out, Mysterium. I don't know dates on that one, but that one's a really cool... it's got cards in it that are kind of... thematically, like they're I'm kind of rambling here. It's the cards have like this really cool artwork, somewhat like Dixit, and there's one person who's a ghost who's trying to get people to guess how a murder occurred, basically. So the ghost can't talk during the game. They're talking to people through the cards, like handing them out, trying to get people to guess like what weapon the person had, like who it was, the location, that sort of stuff. So it's kind of like Clue mixed with Dixit. And that one I played once with Eric Summer, actually. And that one is amazing. And I'm looking forward to that coming out in the US.
And I'm so jealous. Not that you played it with Eric Summer, that's awesome, but that you played it because I want to play this game so bad. I'm so excited for this game. So yeah, Mysterium, that sounds like a great game. So, yeah, those are upcoming things that we are excited about. Some other things that I see here on the list. I see the Dice Masters Age of Ultron. And I see Mars Attacks 10-Minute Takedown. It looks like a pretty interesting game. You were asking me about this one. It's like a dexterity game from Steve Jackson Games where you flick the dice and you have to get onto the rings. And you score points kind of on these different rings. You take turns. So it's kind of like... table golf, maybe you would call it that. So looks kind of interesting. Anything else for the good of the order, Brian?
No.
All right. Awesome. All right, ladies and gentlemen, there it is. That is Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 3. We are finished. So, Brian, how did you feel about that episode?
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, that was exciting. Lots of games to talk about. So that's my favorite thing to do, talk about games and other things. I am excited for all the upcoming things we have going on, the board game nights, Forbidden Stars. I'm totally looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to going to Gen Con. It's getting closer and closer. We were like a month and a half away. So
yeah,
that's
before
gonna be,
we know we're going to be driving over there.
I know. It's going to be super exciting. So we'll have lots of info. We just recently got a digital portable recorder so we can go and record people. So I'm excited to do that and see what we can do with that. So
yeah, and somewhat off the cuff, if there's anything people are looking forward to hearing about or stuff that you guys want to listen to, ideas for segments or anything like that, you could just email us at
portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com. Nice. So that's that. That end of the episode, as always, I am the Brant, and I am with
Brian Raddatz.
And we hope you step into the portal. Portal Gaming Podcast is a product of Time Machine Toy and Hobby Store / The Portal, which is located at 71 and 60 Hilliard Street in Manchester, Connecticut. This episode was recorded on June 16, 2015. Please send any questions to us at portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com. Special thanks to Omar Nauman and Epic Arts for assisting in the recording of this podcast. Thank you for listening.